Good afternoon. My name is Mike Senyu. I'm with HMTRI. HMTRI is a nonprofit organization. We provide technical assistance to communities interested in starting environmental workforce development job training programs. We are not EPA, and we don't speak for EPA or EPA policy. We have been working with communities since the beginning of brownfields, so we're very familiar with what communities need to do to develop good job training programs and to keep them sustainable. So what we offer is a website, brownfieldstoolbox.org. We offer technical assistance on an individual basis. And we provide professional learning community calls. We do this every 2 weeks. Our next call will be February 17th, when we're going to start a new cohort of professional learning community calls every 2 weeks from 2 to 2:30 on Wednesdays. This call represents the last call of this series, where we looked at the critical issues associated with developing a environmental job training program with a look forward to developing proposals that would incorporate all of the good best practices of job training programs. This particular call is kind of a summary and a tune-up for those people who have been following us and working on this program for the last 5 months. And just looking at some do's and don'ts before the proposals are due, which is next Thursday, the 14th of January. Today we're going to specifically talk about what you may want to look at as you've written your proposal and getting ready to submit it. We suggest that you submit your proposal early. If you haven't already, I would submit it first thing after the weekend. I would perhaps take one last look if you have not submitted it already. Take one last look this weekend. Look at some of the suggestions we're making and some of the items that we listed in the post-session notes, and see if your proposal addresses all of those issues. If not, you could fine-tune it and still submit early. We, again, emphasize to submit early just in case there's an issue with either the grants.gov or with your computer system, or if you have a power outage or a snowstorm, whatever, for some reason it's not accepted. Just to give you a rundown on the agenda or schedule for the over the next 6 or 8 months. Of course, proposals due January 14th. You won't hear from anyone for a couple of months. They take all the proposals and they screen them to see that if proposals qualify to go on to the ranking criteria. And then they review all the ranking criteria. They convene a group of panelists who will take apart your proposal and look at every question, every piece of information they want, and put a numerical score on it. They'll take the top ranking scores, and then they'll look at other factors, which we'll talk about later, to choose as many job training programs as they can fund with the money, $3.3 million that they have to allocate. This is usually about 17 proposals. It's not cast in stone. In the past, we've observed that about half go to what I call re-ups, really good programs with good proposals that have already been funded. And then about half of them are new grantee proposals that have never been funded. That could change. It really depends on the quality of the proposal. But we've observed in the last couple of rounds, this is the way funds have been allocated. There are some minor changes in this year's proposal, which is could have a big impact on your proposal, which we'll again we'll talk about later. After proposals have been ranked and the final selection has been made by EPA, the announcements will be sent out in April, perhaps May, depending on the work schedule, and it'll go to the principal that's indicated on the grant and probably filter down to project officers and people who will be doing the program. So this is the April-May time period. At that point, the work plans have to be finalized by EPA and signed off on July, August. You cannot get your first check, really, until the work plans have been signed off on and all negotiations have been completed. And that will, again, happen between July and September. And then, of course, during that same time period, we have a HMTRI all-grantee meeting. This year it'll be in Alexandria, August 16th and 19th, tentatively. We'll send out announcements, and all communities are invited who have grants and also those communities who are serious about submitting or in the process of establishing a program. Those are PLC members are invited. And the all-grantee meeting is a two-day program where we break out into sessions and talk about all of the things we talk about during the year in the PLC. We have all of the regional coordinators. We have EPA representatives and representatives from other agencies that influence the job training programs. It's really an intensive 2 days, but a good chance to speak with potential mentors, people who have had programs for 10 or 12 years, people who are funded by EPA and some who are not funded, and alumni who have had programs in the past. So it's an excellent opportunity to spend some time with people who have established programs. Of course, then after that, you could begin the training program, your first cohort, probably in the fall of September 2016, and submit quarterly reports every 3 months. The next national brownfields will probably be in the spring of 2017. They usually occur about once every 18 months. So when you're budgeting, you might keep those dates in mind as far as meetings. Other meetings you may want to include in your budget will be if you have a state or regional brownfields association. We find that this is an excellent place to get to know your local and regional employers. Often they'll have booths or displays. They'll be presenting sessions, and it's a good place to network. Florida Brownfields Association is especially good. It covers the entire Region 4 and has all of the major employers, both in the region and nationally, attending. Gives you an opportunity to talk to potential employers, to see what's happening in the region and what projects are going on. So those are some things that you may want to keep in mind. Of course, we've always, through our sessions, suggested that you keep in touch with your local Department of Environmental Management, DNR or DEQ, or your county, and also in your city government or county government. These people are the ones that are have their feet on the ground in terms of actually doing cleanup. In fact, I noted that state of Rhode Island just awarded $4 million to 14 brownfield cleanup projects. And these are state programs, they're state brownfields, but they're people who need our graduates. And they're an excellent group to stay in touch with. Of course, if you've been listening to our calls, you know that you're coordinating and perhaps have them on your advisory boards. Perhaps they're speaking, going to your graduation, and an integral part of your program. So you should have them already involved in your assessment process and your community organization process. One of the things about these proposals, and we'll talk now about proposal tune-up, but one of the things about these proposals, they're not like a lot of academic grants. These are cooperative agreements. And the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program really is not a program where you put down some general ideas and then you wing it or develop the program as it goes. It's really a very specific outline of your program plan, what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, who's going to do it, what it's going to cost, what kind of leveraging you're going to have. And everything, when you get the grant, you've actually done all the planning already as part of the grant proposal. When they fund one of these programs, they know exactly what you're going to do, what certificates you're going to provide, who's going to fund it, what the budget's going to look like, who's your target group, who your potential employers are. And conversely, to get funded, you have to have all this detail. The 17 proposals that are funded will most likely be in a group of maybe 50 or 60 proposals submitted. As I said earlier, about half are re-ups and about half new. So maybe 25% of the submitted proposal be funded. And of course, many of those, some of them won't qualify under the qualifying criteria. And then a whole lot of them will go into the ranking criteria. And here's where many will drop out because they have not addressed specific issues. And where most of the proposals fall short is they're not answering all the questions. The spread between those that are funded, the best proposals, and the bottom of the group that are funded is very small. So it appears that you either have a lot of really good proposals and then a lot of proposals that just don't have the effort put into them, have not made the contacts, have not spent the time doing proper analysis. And in the most cases, what I mean by not doing proper analysis, they have not expressed in their proposal in a specific enough detail what they're going to be doing. They're not addressing all of the questions, and they're not naming names, or talking about dates, or who their contacts are, or how they're getting them involved, how they're leveraging, how much they're leveraging. And the rule of thumb is if it's not written into that proposal, it doesn't exist as far as reviewers go. So number one is you've got to go back to your proposal and find out how specific you were. One, did you follow all the guidelines and sequence? And of course, as reviewers would indicate, if you don't take apart every question, every sub-question, put that on a board and make sure you answer it. And make sure you answer it very specifically. So where numbers fall off in terms of reviewing these proposals is when they skip a question or they don't answer it specifically, or they may answer it in the first part of the proposal, but then later when that information is relevant to a question that's asked, they assume that it's already been written in the proposal somewhere else. And the reality is it has to be in that section, under that criteria, under that specific question, that answer has to be placed there. So do not assume, one, that they know your program, two, that something is inferred, or three, it's written somewhere else in the proposal but doesn't answer the question that they're specifically asking. A good way to look at this is assume that every question that's asked will be reviewed by a reviewer who's never seen the rest of the proposal. That way, when they look at it, they're going to see very specifics that are addressed to that very specific question. So you don't want to put extra information that doesn't pertain to that question or request for data. You don't want to put extraneous material in there, but you have to make sure that you put everything you need in that particular question or request for information that's relevant to that. And you always want to tie it back to brownfields. This is a brownfields program. It is environmental workforce development job training, but it's started and in reality it continues to be a brownfields program. So you have to, whether it's your target group, whether it's employers, whether it's the sites, certificates that are going to be given, certifications, how they're relevant to the brownfields in your community and how you're going to tie that in. So what I want to do is go over comments from past failed applicants. This is a great piece that EPA put together that is a culmination of or a listing of all of the reasons why applications lost points. And, of course, there are many others in this, but I'll summarize them in today's PLC. I'm going to send out in the post-session notes. This will be for session 140. If you come back at a later date and want to look at it, they'll be in the post-session notes, the comprehensive list of about 50 or 60 points where people fall short. But in summary, let me go over a few of these. And I already mentioned follow the guidelines, do it in sequence, be specific, and relate it to brownfields. As far as your demographics go, it's fine to put some general demographics in there, but that's just fluff. Basically, keep that local and relevant to the brownfields. The population to be trained and the location and target group and why you're picking them and why they're so special. What are their specific issues? In terms of assessments, again, specific to employers, those employers working in brownfields, how, again, you can be very specific to them, and you'll want to have them engaged not only in the program but in your grant, who they are, what types of people they might be hiring. And also in the post-session notes will include something that you should have done already. We've talked about in the past is a employer involvement letter, a way of contacting your employers, asking them if they would consider hiring your graduates, what specialties that they'd like to see, what certifications they'd like to see, and have that how that fits into your proposal. And again, you want to put that into your proposal so with specific numbers to justify the training you're doing. You want to, of course, elaborate on your specific cycles, the number in each cohort, the retention rate you're planning on, the graduation rate that you're planning on. Specific to training, you want to talk about safety procedures you can use during training. It's not only important that you protect your students as you train them in health and safety, but you also want to make sure in recruitment that you're placing them in safe workplaces. You want to provide specific certificates. You want to talk about the life skills, why they need them and what you're going to be doing, who's going to be providing them and how much it's going to cost. You may want to talk about facilities you're going to use, specifically the transportation, how students are going to get to class. Perhaps you're going to leverage transportation with the city. Perhaps someone's going to provide leverage funding, and you want to include costs and what the value of that leverage is to your grant. Those are all, again, I'm talking always about specifics. In terms of recruitment, you want to talk about the use of tryouts, drug testing, what kind of screening process, what your acceptance criteria is going to be. No fees really are allowed in terms of this program. It's federally funded. If there's any fees associated with the programs. Of course, we'll talk about this as far as getting into leveraging. If you're working with a WIB, the Workforce Investment Board may have a program to provide not only transportation, but books and safety equipment, and you'll want to elaborate that and put estimates of what the value of that leveraging is. We've talked about in previous PLCs the importance of rationing your seats. You may have 20 seats, and those seats have to go to the most deserving people in your community and those most likely to succeed. So deserving and likely to succeed and be able to place people. Unfortunately, there's not enough seats to go around, so you have to have some sort of filtering process. The larger your community, of course, the larger your group, you can be more selective. If you're in a small community, a tribe, or a very rural area, you may not have the recruits or applicants to do the type of screening you would like to. It's more difficult in rural areas than in urban areas. That ties into your marketing efforts and what you plan on doing to bring in as many applicants as you can. But the question is, how do you filter those applicants down to the 20 most deserving, most likely to succeed, most employable group of people coming out of your program, and a well-written program plan of how you plan to do that, whether it's tryouts, whether it's one or two awareness nights followed by a long application, followed by an interview, followed by drug tests, selection by a panel. Again, the more detailed, the more likely the reviewers will realize that those who enter the program are very likely to retain and be retained in the program, resulting in a lower retention, a higher retention rate, lower dropout rate, and higher placement rate. And those you want to demonstrate as a part of your whole recruitment process. You want to make sure when we move into the budget part that all your numbers work. For example, you have to make sure that what you say in one part of the program is going to show up on the budget sheets. One of the very common issues is that the numbers don't match. So you have illustrated all of the things you're going to spend money on and how much they're going to cost, and then it's not properly demonstrated on your budget sheet, which is completely different. Of course, there's some obvious things in terms of on these programs, no indirect costs are allowed, but you also may want to keep an eye on cost of personnel or cost of subs or partners. You may have a case where you're subbing out the training and the prices are exorbitant. You want to keep those in line. What you're going to be paying for, what is going to be leveraged, and what's going to be in kind, all has to be there. You also want to make sure you budget for the annual all-grantee meeting, which I talked about in August. The Brownfields meeting won't be this year, but it'll be won't be in 16, but it'll be in 17. You want to make sure you budget for those and include them in your budget and travel budget. You may also, as I indicated previously, want to allow for costs associated with going to a state Brownfields Association meeting or a regional association meeting. Of course, obviously, in your placement, your target goals, what you expect to place, percentage, what kind of tracking you're going to be doing. These all require that third year of tracking. We have grantees who track forever, and they incorporate the grantees as mentors and into their program. What kind of social media are you going to use? We've talked about that in PLCs, and we'll in the future talk about using different types of social media where you're engaging your students, current and past, together to encourage each other to get better jobs, to get advancements in their program, to get recertifications, come back to the program. You may want to talk about environmental justice issues with your job training program and the target groups that you're planning on addressing. Of course, we definitely want to talk about leveraging and in-kind when you talk about the associated groups that are going to be working with you, whether it's a WIB, whether it's a nonprofit, whether you're partnering with a youth build or some other organization that may be doing training already and you're working with them. And of course, certainly you want to talk about sustainability. These programs were originally designed to get programs going, not to sustain them. That's part of the challenge of getting a program going. Hopefully they will be going and they will attach on to additional programs like Youth Build. They'll be getting some funds from other sources or maybe incorporated in some state programs or other nonprofit organizations and be able to sustain themselves. All of those things will add to your point total, specifically if you name names and get very specific to not only that issue, but as it relates to the brownfield and the community. One of the things that isn't talked about and is not understood very much is the other factors. We've observed over the years that there is this desire to have grants across the country. There are a few rural areas that don't have many grants, and some that have many programs. And of course, you would expect that because there's more brownfields in the Northeast than there is perhaps in Region 7 or in some rural, maybe rural mines, or might be tribal programs. But I think there's a desire in EPA to spread these programs across the country, and certainly in areas that are heavily hit by layoffs or have special considerations, plant closures, environmental degradation, special circumstances. And what you want to do is certainly identify any particular circumstance, particular plant closings, or might be enterprise zones or redevelopment zones, or targeted by other agencies as specific areas that need help. And those are all really relevant. They may or may not help you. They won't hurt you, but there may be, you may be in a locality that has no programs in it or no programs near it. You may be in an area that's especially hard hit for a lot of reasons, and you want to really look at that, because what it may provide you with is the fact that you may not score as high as the top tier of grantees funded. You may not make that cut, but you've got a special circumstance which may propel you up into that higher level. So it's not trivial. It's really important that you tie that in to any kind of economic or environmental distress in your community. Really, I would advise taking a strong look at that. As I said, the point spread between the highest and lowest is very narrow. And probably the more programs you have in the area, it might be a little more competitive in your area than an area that's more rural or does not have programs or does not have the environmental degradation that your areas of Superfunds, brownfields, those are extremely important. So what I'm going to do is in the post-session notes, I'm going to put a list of issues that EPA compiled of things that can take points off your score. And as I said, I would at this point, we're at the 11th hour, but I would probably look at your proposal and look at all the ranking criteria and, one, make sure that you've addressed every question asked, dissect it, take it apart, find out who's going to respond to that or respond to that very specifically. Whatever you put in there, make sure you put something in there after every issue. And then go to this list and, again, be as specific on each of those issues as you can. Tie it into the community as best you can. Tie it into brownfields the best you can. One of the things that we talked about in previous PLCs, but I'll just mention it as we conclude today's session, is the new criteria that relates to funding specific courses and the funding that's available to EPA for different types of training. And this arose while most of this program is Brownfield Hazardous Waste Site Program. About $3 million is provided by that particular office in EPA. Other offices provided funding, whether it's solid waste management or wastewater or emergency planning or pest management. But they provided a lot less support, $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 versus millions of dollars provided by groups. So the desire, I believe, is for training to be lined with the funding that's provided by those offices, which is perfectly logical. The dilemma it presents is that, for example, in wastewater training, there was $47,000 contributed by that office to this program. Now, clearly, it would not be fair and probably improper for this program to fund many wastewater programs that might cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I think the effort's going to be made to align the funding as best possible to the amount allocated or given to contributed to this program. The implication for those writing and submitting grants is that if you're going to have, for example, a wastewater program, there was $47,000 allocated to that or contributed to the program. That means that gives EPA, if they're going to keep that in line, maybe one or two primarily wastewater programs, or perhaps divide that up amongst many awareness programs. Same with pest management. It's only $10,000 allocated, which means maybe you could have one or two pest management programs or awareness. Well, it seems to me that perhaps a logical thing would be to fund several 10 awareness programs, maybe at $1,000 each. Maybe, and it's up for grabs how that's going to go. Their EPA is asking everyone to use their own judgment and decide what their labor market assessments indicated to them and write the best proposal they can to train to that, knowing that if they don't and cannot fund that program or don't have funds to support it, they'll just zero that out of your grant, not necessarily reject your grant, but zero that out. So it could be, for example, even in pest management, if you had a pest management awareness program, but they've already allocated the $10,000 to other programs, they might just take that out of your work plan so that you would not have funding for pest management. Doesn't mean you can't get leverage funding from someone else. You might be able to do it through your DEQ or DNR or one of your programs, or it might be leveraged if you're part of a larger program like Youth Build, who feel it's important, they could support that program. So just keep in mind that. And in previous PLCs, we included a memo from Joe Bruss about the specific issue because we had a lot of questions. And he wrote a very definitive statement about what he felt could be included in hazardous waste, brownfields hazardous waste. And he indicated that he felt that lead abatement, asbestos abatement, RRP, confined space, forklift operator, heavy machinery operations, hazmat, CDL, if you have to drive commercial trucks as part of the brownfields, these and OSHA, that these and stormwater management, these could all be considered as brownfields hazardous waste programs and training. He felt that they all, you needed these certifications and training to really work on a brownfield site. So he felt that those would be acceptable. So many of the programs that our grantees train to would fall under brownfields hazardous waste. The areas you get in that are more controversial is when we get into things like pesticide, alternative energy, wastewater, solid waste management. Certain of those that are have specific funding that they're included in the RFP that you may want to just be cautious about in terms of funding your program, being aware of that. So in conclusion, those are things that I think would be worth you looking at. If you could get a few more points by looking over the list that we send you and by the discussion today, if you get a few more points, it might bump you up into the top 17 grant proposals. That would be great. Get your proposal in on time. Make sure that you've put specific names in. Make sure absolutely that you keep in touch with those people because there's a good chance if they're in the proposal, they might get called. And don't feel that if you don't get accepted in this round of grant proposals that it's over. In less than a year, they'll be requesting a new set of proposals, hopefully. This has been an annual program for quite a few years. We expect it's going to continue. So it's really time to start, as soon as you've submitted this, it's time to start working on making the program better. And if you get funded, that'll be awesome. if you don't get funded, you get an opportunity to talk to the regional job training coordinator, find out how you could improve your program. You have an opportunity to come to our all-grantee meeting, sit down with successful programs, attend our PLCs, visit our website. On our PLCs, we'll have discussions with successful programs, perhaps find a mentor that could help you with yours to get it better. And going back to your partners and sponsors, and it's not at all shameful that perhaps you did not get funded this year, but you plan on getting funded next year by beefing up your proposal, keeping in touch with those and improving your programs, and perhaps getting some funding from a group that you've touched base with. It might be DEQ, Environment Management. It might be a youth build who wants to keep this thing going and fund it as a pilot program to get your program started and keep the ball rolling. So with that, our next professional learning community, which this one is, this tranche is ending. Our next set of 10 will begin on February 17th, every other week. And it'll be different than this one. And the next time we'll be talking to successful grantees and telling us about their program and what made their program outstanding, and have a chance for people to ask questions. So good luck, everyone, on your program. And if you have any questions, you could email me at msenyu@aol.com. Thanks for participating in the call. Talk to you soon.